This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. For baseball fans, it's the ultimate fantasy. Picking the roster, setting the lineup, deciding on strategies, all with real players in a real ballpark. That's what baseball analysts and stats crunchers Ben Lindbergh and Sam Miller got to do for one full season when a minor league team in California offered them the chance to run its baseball operations according to the most advanced statistics. For Lindbergh and Miller, both baseball writers and hosts of Effectively Wild, the Daily Baseball Prospectus podcast, it was a dream come true that put their statistical theories to the ultimate test. Ben Lindbergh joins us this afternoon to talk about their new book, The Only Rule Is It Has to Work, Our Wild Experiment Building a New Kind of Baseball Team. Ben, thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure.
How did you and Sam get to actually run a team based on sabermetrics? How did this come about?
Yeah, it was an idea that we had in our heads for a while, but we didn't know when or how or when we would do it. And we were contacted by this team, the Sonoma Stompers, an independent league team in a little league called the Pacific Association in Northern California. And they knew of our work. They'd read our writing and they'd listened to our podcast. And they just invited us to a game, not knowing what we had in mind. But when we met them and we saw the park and we saw Sonoma, we figured this was the perfect place to put this into practice. And they liked the idea because, you know, they thought we could make them a better baseball team, that we'd be able to do some things that they didn't have the resources to do, and also that it wouldn't be bad publicity to have a couple of writers take over a team for a summer.
And in the minor leagues, it's all about publicity, isn't it, and getting the seats filled.
That's right, yes. And, you know, that's kind of what we were able to offer, the focus on the baseball side. The GM of the Stompers was worried about, you know, making sure the concession stands were stocked and making sure they were selling enough tickets and being able to pay the players. And so we were able to kind of pick up the slack and actually worry about signing players and deploying them properly.
Now, what would the sabermetrics stand for, Ben, and what is it exactly?
It's it comes from the Society for American Baseball Research and was sort of a takeoff of that. But the basic idea is just to look for objective knowledge about baseball, and it doesn't have to be stats-based, although often it is. And, you know, sabermetrics has really been embraced in baseball more than any other sport, although it is now making inroads into every other major sport as well.
So how much did Moneyball, you're talking about how it's making inroads in baseball, how much did Moneyball, that the story of how the Oakland A's used sabermetrics successfully, how much was that influencing what you and Sam were doing?
Well, it certainly was a book that we liked a lot and that, you know, maybe contributed to our becoming writers. We didn't really do anything specifically that the A's had done. Of course, you know, that was over 10 years ago now, close to 15. And so, you know, the field has sort of moved on a little bit since then. And we were trying to push the envelope and do some things that no one had done before. And this was kind of the perfect place for us to try that because, you know, the independent leagues are a little less restrictive and players aren't making that much money and there isn't that much scrutiny from the media and there isn't that much pressure. So there's a little more freedom to try some new things.
Now, the GM in Sonoma was Theo Fightmaster, is that right?
That's right. That's his real name.
Yeah, that's his real name. How much latitude did Theo actually give you?
A lot, actually. You know, that was kind of the condition of our doing this, was that we would essentially have free rein. And so we had, you know, the authority from Theo and from the Stompers owner to do more or less what we wanted. Although, of course, in practice, we still sort of had to sell everything that we wanted to do because, you know, even if the owner or the GM told the players to listen to us, in practice, we really had to earn their respect and we had to prove that we had something to contribute and that we deserved to be in the dugout every day. And so, you know, that was a difficult thing that we had to figure out as the season went on.
So tell me about some of the players you were dealing with.
Yeah, so, you know, we ended up signing players based on stats. So we looked for guys who had been passed over in the major league draft. You know, they'd been great college performers, but for whatever reason, they weren't big enough. They didn't throw hard enough. They had an injury at the wrong time. Some reason, they just hadn't been signed by any teams. And we thought their stats made the case that they could succeed at this level. And so we signed a bunch of guys essentially sight unseen and hoped that they would prove us right. And a lot of them did. And of course, a lot of them turned out to be great guys and interesting characters. And one of the players we signed, Sean Conroy, turned out to be the first openly gay active professional baseball player, which added a dimension to the season and the story that we really hadn't anticipated. And so So I think the reader really gets a front row seat, you know, shares the seat that we had in the dugout and gets to know and really care about these guys.
Now, in Moneyball, I think they were using on-base percentages, their key stat in evaluating players. Was there a certain statistic that you were using, or were you just looking at everything across the board for each of these players?
Yeah, we were trying to take into account everything we could, and you know, there wasn't really as much information in this league as we were used to. We're used to everything being handed to us on some website, you know, because it all exists at the major league level, and everything has been tracked for decades, but at this level, we really had to supply our own statistics. So we set up a scouting network. We had people at every game with computers and radar guns and video cameras, you know, trying to capture all this information. And we partnered with companies to install all this fancy hardware in our little sleepy small town ballpark so that we could track every pitch and track every batted ball. And so we really had to do a lot of legwork that we didn't have any experience with before, because you know, we just thought, oh, this stuff exists and we can just make use of it. But in this case, we were kind of time traveling a few decades back to when it didn't exist, and we had to generate it ourselves.
So you really were turning this ball team into a data-driven organization, it sounds like.
Yeah, we were doing our best, and we were working on a very accelerated timeline. You know, we knew this was just a one-summer experiment, and so we had to do everything more quickly than we would have liked, and there were definitely some miscommunications and conflicts and stumbles along the way, and that was frustrating at the time, I think, but it turned out to be pretty good for the book, I think, because, you know, if everything had gone smoothly from day one, it probably wouldn't be as satisfying to read.
Ben, what was the biggest surprise you came across as you were doing this?
I think the fact that the book really turned out to be less about statistics. You know, we set out to write this book about baseball and stats, and of course it is about those things, but it really turned out to be the story of the players and the relationships between the people, because in order to apply these theories and put these concepts into practice, we had to convince players that they made sense. And so a lot of it wasn't really just about our ability to analyze data. It was about our ability to communicate and to make this stuff sound fun and, you know, make it sound non-threatening. And we didn't want to be dictators and tyrants and tell everyone what to do. We wanted to achieve some sort of consensus and learn from people the way that we hoped they would learn from us. So it really turns into this book that I think people from all walks of life could appreciate, because they'll recognize something from their own professional experience in ours.
This is interesting what you're talking about. Man, you know, managing a baseball team is about more than just playing statistics. As you're saying, you're dealing with real people. Was there ever a point when you were doing this where the stats went out the door?
Yeah, I would say that there were. You know, especially early in the season when we didn't have enough of a sample to really say with any confidence that the stats were telling us something. We had to rely on people who kind of, you know, approached the game in a different way than we did. And we had to rely on the expertise of our manager, who had been in baseball for decades, and, you know, trust that he could pick some things up before the stats could and before we could, because, you know, we're not scouts and we're used to looking at the numbers and not necessarily relying on our own eyes. So we had to integrate both of those disciplines. And I think there were times when the stats helped us avoid mistakes, but there were definitely also times when, you know, the old school sort of traditional eye test helped us make mistakes that we would have made, you know, just relying on the stats alone.
You think your experience puts an end to the debate between the people who are stats geeks and the traditionalists?
I think so. I think it's another data point in support of the idea that, you know, everyone's smarter if they all work together. And that's something we've seen at the major league level. You know, teams have hired more and more statistical analysts, but those jobs haven't come at the expense of scouts. They've continued to hire more scouts, too. So it's all information. It all just takes different forms, and hopefully you can synthesize it in a way that makes everyone smarter.
So how successful were you in making the Stompers a better team?
I think we were very successful. I won't give away exactly how it ends, but the Stompers were playing significant, meaningful games right up to the last day of the season, and there is a dramatic ending that we really couldn't have scripted if we'd wanted to. So I think, you know, we showed that we could put together a competitive team, and we could find some guys who wouldn't have gotten a chance otherwise, and that was a really satisfying thing for us. But, you know, we definitely made some mistakes along the way, and I hope those are as entertaining to read about as the successes.
Yeah, of the players you were dealing with, Ben, was there one who turned out to be a really pleasant surprise?
Yeah, we signed a guy named Santos Saldivar, who was a standout starter in college, but wasn't drafted because he was 5'8", and that's not what scouts are looking for in their pitchers. And we signed him just based on his college strikeout rates, and he came out to Sonoma and dominated from day one and was really the best pitcher down the stretch of the season. And this spring, he was signed by the Milwaukee Brewers, who had read our book and read about Santos and watched the video and looked at the stats on our website and said, hey, this guy is actually a legitimate talent. And he was essentially out of baseball when we called him up and said, come play for the Stompers. He was considering becoming an accountant, and he is putting that on hold for a while. He's now in the Milwaukee Brewers organization, so that might have been the best thing to come out of this entire project.
What have the Stompers done? Have they continued with the statistical analysis and running the team?
Yeah, they definitely have. They haven't been able to do everything that we did, but they've continued to push the boundaries in other ways. And right now the Stompers have signed two women. They went out and signed two of the best female players in the country, and they're giving them a shot to show that they can succeed in professional baseball. So, you know, it's not purely statistics-based, but they're showing that, you know, there's more than one way to play baseball and more than one way to love the game.
So the two of you got to run the Stompers for one season. If you were given the chance to do this again, would you do it?
Well, they kind of did give us the chance to do it again. We are tempted, and we're you know, considering doing it again in the future. It's a tough thing to do because, you know, I moved across the country and sort of dropped everything else to do this for a summer, and that was possible because of the book. But without the book, it would have been difficult to do. So we'd love to do it. We'd be able to be pulled back into this, and I think there are ways in which we would be much better at it the second time. So it's definitely a tempting opportunity.
So what ways do you think it would be better the second time around?
I think primarily in the way that we presented ourselves. You know, we were kind of tentative. I mean, we were out of our element, and we just didn't know how to, you know, sell our message and how assertive we should be. And I think we learned as the season went on that, you know, power kind of accrues to the people who seize it. And, you know, as the season went on, we asserted ourselves more, and, you know, we signed players and we dropped players and we sort of put our foot down. But it took us some time because, you know, we didn't want to alienate everyone. We didn't want to turn the team against us. And I think we were too tentative at first. So we definitely learned from that.
Well, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Yeah, my pleasure. Good talking to you.
Ben Lindbergh, co-author with Sam Miller of the new book, The Only Rule Is It Has to Work, Our Wild Experiment Building a New Kind of Baseball Team.